In recent years, a peculiar opinion started to make its way online, and with the global accessibility of internet, we suddenly found ourselves in a world under constant scrutiny. In some cases, a valid and necessary scrutiny, one that forces action on big corporations or can lead to justice. But with this more open, more aware internet society, one concerned with human rights issues, the planet, and animal rights, came some more unexpected opinions and judgments. Because as animal rights came to the forefront with the revitalized animal rights movement, the ethicality of guide dogs came into question.
One animal rights activist says working dogs, like guide dogs, police dogs, and even sheepdogs, are being taken advantage of because they can't consent to work.
Are we really just using these animals? Is it ethical to make them work 24/7, or is it perhaps cruel? Is the breeding of dogs justifiable, even if to support the blind and visually impaired? You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. My name is Polina Kuhorev, and in this special feature, we will find out all about a very special friend to our radio station, Guide Dog Quigley. And we'll learn more about the nuanced relationship between a guide dog and their owner, and hopefully address some of those concerns in regards to guide dogs and their rights. This is Alan Russell, who I'm sure you recognize as one of the friendly voices that you hear often on the station.
Join me, Alan Russell, and my guests for chat, a look at the papers and interviews.
One of the most common problems is you don't have anyone to show you down to the platform or to show you where the ticket office is to get a ticket.
I'm really interested in creating environments that will be more accessible to people who are visually impaired and also have other disabilities.
It's one of those sports where there is a sense of danger to it, and I think people will enjoy that.
That's the Early Edition.
The Early Edition on RNIB Connect Radio.
RNIB Connect Radio doesn't only broadcast with the blind and partially sighted audience in mind, but also employs visually impaired presenters like Alan. And every day, Alan is accompanied by a very special someone. His guide dog, Quigley.
Quigley is my guide dog. He is 4.5 years old, and we've been working together for 2.5 years now. He qualified when he was 2 years old, and we were matched by guide dogs. And he is a lab retriever, although probably if you looked at him, you'd think he's mostly Labrador. Very, very light coloured dogs with what I'm told are like dip dye ears, which are apparently quite cute. Big brown eyes, and he's a very happy, quite a cheerful dog, loves lots of attention. He is a great worker as a guide dog, but you have to remember the dogs as well. And he loves being.
And like every other guide dog before him, Quigley had to pass his training first. And a guide dog's very first home is with a puppy walker. And puppy walkers welcome a puppy like Quigley into their family and are responsible for starting his basic training. From socializing to going to the toilet on command, puppies will spend roughly a year with a volunteer before going on to training school and getting finally matched with an owner. This process can roughly take around 2 years and is more than just assigning a guide dog to a blind or partially sighted person.
You have to match the dog. They don't just have dogs to just give you one. Dogs are like people. They're all individuals. They have different strengths and weaknesses. So the dogs have to be matched to you. So I waited, I think, from my previous guide dog, Troy, retiring, probably about 18 months to 2 years before I got Quigley. And I had to go back to using the white cane.
How
was
that?
Which I hate. The cane's very restrictive because it slows you down. You walk a lot slower with a cane. You can't ask a cane to find the stairs or find the door or things like that, whereas you can with the guide dog. And also with a cane, you find the obstacle. So you hit the obstacle, you have to tap your way to find your way around things. But with the guide dog, you just move around stuff, you know, a lot quicker, a lot faster, in my opinion, safer as well. And you just feel, you actually feel more independent with the dog. You feel more of an independent person. The cane, I think, for me, I know it's a personal choice.
That's something that seems to come up a lot as we talk, the confidence and independence that comes with the special bond between a guide dog and someone living without sight. Alan only has some light perception left in his eyes and not enough to walk around unaided, and certainly not enough to navigate a busy street, or in fact one that often has roadworks on it or cars parked everywhere, one like the street just outside of his work. In fact, not long ago, the street corner right by the entrance to our radio station was dug out. For what? We're not sure, but it's safe to say Alan would not be able to find his way around and could have possibly landed himself in a spot of trouble if he took a wrong step. I mean, considering the awkward couple of feet drop where a street used to be just the day before.
So it's changing all the time. There's a lots of machinery moving about. Pavements are closed one minute, open the next, and he just finds his way through it all.
Last October, newspapers reported about a woman who berated blind disability campaigner Dr. Amit Patel, telling him using a guide dog was cruel. This is not the first time this question was brought up to the public eye, as just last year, Piers Morgan was having the same debate on Good Morning Britain, and Wendy Turner-Webster, animal welfare campaigner, went on Good Morning Britain saying guide dogs were unethical because they couldn't give consent.
But they all fall under your umbrella of dogs that have not given consent do highly valuable work. I mean, that is your all-encompassing role, right?
Well, my point is that, you know, I'm very uncomfortable with the idea that we use animals. You know, we've used animals for a long time and back, you know, war horses and pigeons and dogs in rockets and things like that. And I want to obviously get away from the fact of us using animals for our benefit,
But is a guide dog's life really that hard? Is it a 24/7 job that they have not signed up for and not given consent to? Well, I asked Alan what a day in the life of a guide dog really looks like.
It kind of changes. Obviously, weekends are different, but like a weekday, I would get up around 20 to 6 in the morning. Quiggle will probably still lie in his bed. He'll kind of look at me as if to say, "Oh, right, you off to get your shower?" Then he'll
so he doesn't
there.
Sleep with you.
He sleeps in our room. Yeah, he has a bed downstairs in the living room. He has a bed in the bedroom, and he's a bed in the back of the car. So he's got lots of places to chill out. Although he does like just lying on the floor on his back, which is one of his habits. So I get up and get ready. Then I'm kind of ready to go, all dressed. I'll take him downstairs, let him out into the garden. Do what he's got to do, and then we kind of get ready and go to work. So he'll jump in the car and off we go. We arrive at the office about 7 a.m. and he has his breakfast then, and then he'll go out for a little walk after that and kind of play about the office, really visit people in the office, go see other offices for attention. He's quite a famous chap, everyone knows him, no one really knows me.
He's the most popular one here.
It's always the case. And when we go out at lunchtime, out for a walk, stretch his legs, go for a little stroll around, go for something to eat. And then when we get home again, he'll be out in the garden, he'll get his dinner. And then we might go for a walk, or he might want a bit of playtime, so he'll get his toys over and maybe play with them for a little while. Or he quite likes just to chill out. But a couple of times a week, we'll go to the park, and he loves that. You know, he doesn't need toys in the park. He's quite happy to just run about, play, sniff, find other dogs to play with as well. He's a really sociable kind of guy, so even through the week he still has quite a bit of activity to do as well, apart from just being a guide dog.
Yeah, because it's a very important job, but when you describe it like that, he really just sounds like a regular happy dog.
He is. I don't know, some people perhaps think guide dogs are guide dogs 24/7, but when the harness comes off, he's a dog like any other dog. Obviously, you know, he has to behave in certain ways as well when the harness is off, if we're maybe in a restaurant or something like that. So, you know, they are well trained to behave. But at the end of the day, he's a dog that likes to play. He gets up to a bit of mischief now and again. He has off days, you know, like we all do. He maybe doesn't want to work, you know, can't be bothered. Or if you're out working, he maybe gets a bit distracted more than usual. That's just par for the course. They're not machines. You know, they're
not machines. They're just dogs at the end of the day. Quite a different picture painted to what the anti-guide dog campaigning suggests. and I couldn't help but ask Alan what he thought of the whole thing, and his response came with a polite air of someone used to addressing difficult questions. After all, diplomacy skills come in handy if you're on air every day discussing difficult topics, but it's hard to imagine how this man manages to keep his cool concerning how the negative campaigning could impact his quality of life and his day-to-day independence.
There has been a lot of, in the media recently, people saying that, you know, you're forcing dogs to be guide dogs. It's going against what they want. You know, they've been forced into this purgitude thing, or purgatory. And I don't believe that for a second. You know, humans and animals have worked together since the Stone Age, you know, since the wolves first helped the cavemen protect their caves and the cavemen fed the wolves. So that bond and that supporting each other has been there for a long time. My argument would be, yes, he works with me. He looks after me. He helps me get around. He gives me back my independence. He gives you confidence as well. But like I said, it's a two-way street. I mean, how many times do you hear about dogs who are abused, starved, not looked after properly? Guide dogs get the best food. They get the best health care. They are well behaved as well. So, you know, their behaviour is, well, it has to be good behaviour because they're taking so many public places. So if there are any problems, that they're looked after, and they get playtime as well. You know, they're not guide dogs 24/7. They become real dogs when the harness is off. So they get the best of both worlds. And they enjoy it as well. You know, if you ever watch Quigley, his tail wags when he's working. All my dogs have been like that. They see it as a game, as a challenge as well. And any dog trainer, never mind a guide dog trainer, will tell you if a dog doesn't want to do something, it will not do it.
Alan's words were much kinder than Good Morning Britain's Piers Morgan, who, in his usual way, decided to end the argument with one of his passionate speeches.
Oh, you know what, Wendy? Why don't we just let guide dogs do their fabulous work for people who are blind and rely on them and can then get out and about because of their guide dogs? The guide dogs always look happy to me. The people that they're helping look happy to me.
They seem to thrive on it.
Why don't you just continue riding your horse without its consent?
However, Alan was not the only one of this opinion. Another producer at our radio station, Simon Pauly, echoed the same sentiment. Albeit not a guide dog owner himself, Simon has worked at the station long enough to witness the benefits of guide dogs on his friends and colleagues. He had some careful advice to anyone who considered harassing visual impaired people with guide dogs in the street.
I would suggest that they go and look at the facts behind how guide dogs are bred and how they're trained, and if they have some problems, perhaps to approach guide dogs themselves, because guide dogs, I'm sure, would be happy to open up their services and show them how they do it.
And it's true. Quigley seems just like any regular dog. In fact, there's an abundance of funny stories as told by Alan's co-workers who had the pleasure of dog-sitting Quigley when Alan goes away on a holiday. Though perhaps the one told by a radio station manager after her first time looking after the playful guide dog is the most memorable one.
Took him out for a walk in a park one day, and you get given a whistle, which I hadn't realised. And if you need him to come back, you just blow the whistle. Anyway, he saw another dog at the other end of the park, and he just went for it. He just ran as fast as he could at this other dog. And I was panicking because I thought, oh, no, this is not good at all. He shouldn't be doing this. I'm completely out of control. I'm supposed to be looking after this dog. And my husband had the whistle. I'm going, blow the whistle, blow the whistle. And Wilf blew the whistle, and he stopped. The dog just stopped mid-run, turned around and kind of came back to us. And the woman who had the other dog just came up and said, I have never seen that before. How on earth did you train him to do that? I'm like, oh, he's nothing to do with us. He's a guide dog and he's really, really well trained. She was like, oh, I see, okay. It was amazing, amazingly well trained.
And even producer Simon can only agree that when not helping Alan, Quigley seems to be like any other pup.
He's very friendly. He's interested in people, especially if they have food. He likes to hang around. In fact, my own relationship with Quigley is, he generally doesn't really bother with me unless I have food, And that's basically it. But other than that, he's very attentive to Alan, who's his driver, and he's just loved by everybody in the office.
As I sat in the office, his wet nose would often poke on my knee and a little jingle of his official guide dog tag would cheerfully announce his presence.
What are you doing? Are you giving me a bath? Thank you.
And that's Quigley asking for pets like any other dog in a setting where he is surrounded by people and he loves the attention. In our spacious office, whilst Alan works away on his computer, Quigley gets to explore. He noses around and pokes around for attention as he pleases. His toys litter the floor. There's a bell-shaped bright red squishy toy, a little chew bone, and then there's the big comfy dog bed right by Alan's desk. And this one took some getting used to, as you can only imagine the chaos a new object on the floor can cause in an office with three blind presenters. Yet somehow everyone seems to manage, things stay in their place, and people learn to skillfully dodge them. Only time ever really ending out of place when the radio station gets another visitor, and it's another happy guide dog.
The other day we had two dogs in, so we normally just have one dog in the office, and we had a visiting guide dog, and they destroyed one of our Christmas Santa hats between them having a play with that. So they're not supposed to be doing that, but it does make me laugh because they're just dogs at the end.
And it's a joy to see Quigley play with another guide dog. And as I watched their little furry bodies bounding up and down the office, sharing their toys and chasing each other, I'm certainly not struck by images of overworked animals forced into hard work without their consent, but rather a happy dog loved by everyone and bringing joy into our small Glasgow office. This relationship between a guide dog and his owner seems to be a hard one to put into words, and even Alan seems to think it's not that simple. But when I asked about it, he couldn't put it down to just one thing.
What do you love about Quigley the most? Just one thing.
That's really tough. It's really hard. But again, you'd have to take it as Quigley the dog and Quigley the guide dog. As Quigley the guide dog, I love it because he's so clever. He's really smart at learning routes and figuring out problems. As Quigley the dog, he's just a cutie. You know, he just loves attention. He loves being clapped, and he gives that back. You know, he sits beside you. He comes over to you and gives you paws. He lies beside you as well. He's quite a loving dog. So it's hard to put it down to one, so I'll break it into guide dog and dog.
At the end of the day, it looks like Quigley, the guide dog, unaware of the debate going around the ethical grounds of his existence, and perhaps not at all interested in it, is just another dog. He's madly in love with his owner and happy to run and play with other people and other dogs whenever he's not aiding his most important person in the world, Alan. And that's it for this little special feature about our guide dog Quigley. I hope you enjoyed it. Please let us know if you have. You can email us at radio@rnib.org.uk. You can find us on Facebook, RNIB Connect Radio, and we're also on Twitter @RNIB Radio.